Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Betfair's Racing Only Better podcast. This is day one Aintree preview show. We're bringing you daily Aintree shows over the 3 days of the Grand National meeting. And here on this show, we are looking at day one, the Thursday, and what an absolute cracker it is, in fairness. Declarations came through, relatively small fields maybe, but that's not going to let us stop us having all the fun here on this pod and tipping a few winners, because we've got really competitive racing and hopefully some superstars to look forward to on the Thursday. I am going to be going through the ITV racing with Daryl Carter, Dan Barber and Tony Calvin. But first stop is to UTC because, of course, all eyes on the weather, not only for the National on Saturday, but of course, the opening day on the Thursday. Soft, heavy in places, is it?
Yeah, it was this morning. Soft, heavy in places in all three courses, but they've had 9.2 mil since today. We're recording this at 3 o'clock on Tuesday even. So it'll be heavy everywhere now after that 9 mil. They're expecting another 5 mil tomorrow from about 9 o'clock onwards. And the forecast for Thursday's just got worse as well. They're forecast another 7 mil. But hopefully that will land after racing. So I think Thursday will be the worst ground of the week.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, and then hopefully drying Friday, Saturday with a bit of luck. I'm very sad that my plans mean I'm not there Thursday, but now I'm thinking maybe that's for the best if it's going to absolutely sleet it down. Let's kick straight on, boys. I'm not even going to cover the niceties with the other two. We're going to jump straight into the first, the ITV racing, which is the juvenile hurdle, the grade one. And it's straight over to you, Daryl, for this, because, of course, we get to see Sergino here. After not seeing him at Cheltenham, after all the issues with the stable form and the wellness of the horses from Nicky Henson's yard, he obviously skipped Cheltenham in the end, much to your disgust, I'm sure, but he's tipping up here and he is 10 to 11 at the top of the market. He's taking on Cargis, who of course finished second at Cheltenham in the Triumph Hurdle 7-2, and Khalif de Burley at 4-1. And when I was looking at this race, Daryl, I thought, where's Daryl going to go? He's got two of his favourite horses of training in here with Khalif de Burley and Sergino. So what's the answer?
Oh, there's only one answer, Vanessa. You know that. It's Sergino.
I did know that.
Yeah, loads of respect for Khalif de Burley. Looking forward to what he can do in the future. But I do think he's going to be a real staying type down the line. Sergino, all speed. I can't wait to see him. I was gutted, obviously, he didn't show up at Cheltenham, but it's time for us to go and collect on him now, I think. It's very difficult to know what price to make a horse like this. When you feel like this about a horse, very difficult to know what price you make him, because I think he could be one of the best juveniles that we've seen for a long, long time. So I think you kind of have to bet where you're comfortable. I am comfortable at a shade of odds on at 10 to 11. You might get a little bit bigger, closer to the off, but I think he's a superstar in the making. I think his form has worked out very well in places. The ground won't be an issue to him. I think this track will suit him. I'll be able to sit there and just pop away. And then there's plenty of time after the last hurdle here to use that motor that he seems to have to kick away. I'm not a massive fan of the Triumph form, really, and those are the Irish. I think he'd take a lot of beating, and I'd be extremely disappointed and embarrassed if he doesn't win.
Oh, God.
Don't be embarrassed, mate. Yeah, no need for that.
I hope for you that he does win, because he's got a lot of airtime on this show. You were all aboard the Sergino train very early on in the season. It's come a little bit off the rails, but it's going to get back on track here, Daryl Carter. Fingers crossed for you. Daryl has no queries about Sergino here in this TC. Do you?
Yeah, I think you have to be. Spoke to Nico de Boinville this morning. Basically, I put the question to him, are you going to know about the form of your stable until they've actually raced? Pretty much the point answer was no, in truth. So that would have to be if the stable don't know, if they've got their horses back on form, then clearly there has to be a big, big issue if you're backing at odds on. I've got no question that he's the best horse in the race. I thought he looked great. I also put it to him, would he want the ground this heavy? And it is going to be heavy, don't get me wrong. Obviously, there's the stock answer is he won on heavy ground in France on his sole start there, but who knows what that ground was that day, because obviously that's just the stock answer, isn't it, there? So I think with the speed he showed after last at Cheltenham, they'd want better ground for him as well. But so the way I'm playing with it, I'll take him out of the equation and I'll look to back Nürburgring without Cugino. Sportsbook haven't got the without prices up at the time of asking, but this Nürburgring's fives in the place, tens and 11s outright. And I think that's very fair. Obviously, he didn't go a yard or really jump early on in the Triumph Hurdle, but he did remarkably well to stay on into fourth. And no surprise that they put the first time cheap pieces on. Well, any headgear would have probably sufficed, but the first time cheap pieces are interesting. Joseph O'Brien hasn't got a good strike rate with them, but quite interestingly, his half brother actually won in the first time he was ridden in first time Tunkai and first time cheap pieces. So if you're in for sibling coincidences, that could be an angle as well. But yeah, I'll be looking to play Nürburgring fives or 92 without the favourite.
Well, I'm kind of, I know this is very momentum. I'm basically in both the boys' camps, Dan, because I think Sergino's going to win it. But I think if there's a bet of the prices, it is Nürburgring. I'm with everything TC said about where he managed to finish, given the ride he got and, you know, his jumping early on. He's got a hell of an engine if he can just get it all together, Nürburgring.
Yeah, absolutely the same. I agree with both lads on those counts and with you as well, V. I actually think the record of the sibling first time blinks is more relevant than the stable as a whole. If you're showing a family member's benefited from headgear for the first time, I think it would count for more than it would with Joseph in general. And you're just not going to get too far back in this race, are you? There's not the same number of runners. That was one of the issues. But I think a lot of people, there's an assumption, isn't there? Oh, the Triumph is a test of stamina, and then they come to Aintree, it's the time for the speed horses to shine. But just to put a bit more meat on the bones of what the ground is likely to be like, the last time, in fact, the only time this century time form called it heavy at Aintree, this race, when it was called the Glenlivet, was won by Bill Bower by 21 lengths from Azurtiop. And the race took 4 minutes 36 to run. Took 18 seconds longer than the soft ground Triumph at Cheltenham this season. Wow. And basically that Triumph this season was a very slow time, as you might anticipate, relative to historically because of the ground. But this race tends to take between sort of 4:15 and 4:18 when the ground isn't even that testing. So there's an obvious hurdle won by Norman Fletcher back in December, which took 4 minutes 42 to run over this course and distance. So I think the notion that cars, yes, oh, going from Cheltenham to Aintree means it's going to be much more of a test of speed that will suit her. I actually think she's going to be even more vulnerable to a stronger finisher. I can see Nürburgring playing his hand late, and I too saw the 4-1 in other places and thought that was much too big in the without favourite market, and I'm playing it exactly the same.
Okay, love that. Before we move on to race two that we'll be covering, and of course that is the third race on the card, we're getting to the bowl. But before we do, don't forget the offer this weekend. Well, Thursday, Friday of Aintree's meeting, completely free bet on horse racing multiples. That's available to you guys Thursday and Friday of the Aintree meeting. But don't forget, you've got to read the T's and C's, you've got to opt in, and you've got to do it responsibly. There are also going to be some extra place races as well. And as you can imagine, an offer-filled weekend. But we want you to do it responsibly, so read those T's and C's, please. Let's move on to the bowl, guys. Stellar lineup here. This is going to be a cracker. 3 miles, 1 furlong on what we think will be pretty testing ground. And Jerry Coulomb is 11-8 at the top of the market, having chased home, of course, Galloping Deschamps in the Gold Cup when we last saw him. But he has Shishkin to take on now at 3-1, another not seen at Cheltenham. But the horse we did at Cheltenham was Corbett's Cross, absolutely bolting up in the National Hunt Chase at 100, and is 130 in here, but of course in against his elders now in open company. Brave Man's Game also in here, Ahoy Senor. That's just the top few. Dan, I'm going to start with you. Is Jerry Coulomb the right favourite in here?
Well, you can take encouragement from 12 months ago because he backed up from a narrow defeat at Cheltenham. Probably should have won, shouldn't he, against the real whacker in the old RSA, the Broadway as it is now, and came out here and won in decisive fashion. In fact, there wasn't really much of a point in that race where he didn't look like winning it convincingly. He comes into it on the back of a second in what I thought was a strong Gold Cup. Been arguing with our handicapper about this. I had to think this year's Gold Cup was better than the Galloping Deschamps the previous year. and it was a really strong effort, but he's priced accordingly, isn't he, Vanessa? He has had a really hard race there, trying to beat the best Dane Chaser in training. And I don't get, I'm loath to slag off a price for an Emmett Mullins horse because he's so switched on, but I don't get why he's only a third of a point bigger than Shishkin Corbett's Cross. I mean, it was a dawdling National Hunt chase. Embassy Gardens returned with an irregular heartbeat. He just accelerated away from him, outclassed him. Mr. Vango was third. I mean, Shishkin was brilliant in this race last season, forging his way to the front late on. He's shaping to me like he'll stay any trip. I just think he'll gallop and gallop and gallop nowadays. And I just think there's too big a gap between the pair, between him and Jerry Colomb. And I think Shishkin is too close to Corbett's Cross. I'd have him under 2-1 personally. I think he's the second best Dane Chaser in training on his day. And I just hope he shows it.
TC, do you agree then with Dan in regards to Shishkin's price being at least a point too big and too close to that of Corbett's Crosses?
Yeah, I do in relation to Corbett's Cross. Corbett's Cross has been the one for early money. I think opened up fours, now into 130. But similar comments to Sugino apply to Shishkin. Obviously, they don't know how their horse is going to run. And although Shishkin's got form in soft ground, you know, this is going to be properly heavy ground, and they would like a better ground from him. They made the point, you know, the one time he's got a real decent surface this season was in the King George, and obviously he was going to go and win that handsomly. I come across this from the angle, as from Dan said, I think the favourite has got everything going for him, grounds, backed up last year, course form, coming here off a career best. The only negatives are that was a big run last time and the stable are in different form. But on the basis that I wouldn't lay 11-8 or 6-4, I'd back Jerry Colomb. I'll be with the favourite around about that price. He's just shy of 6-4 on the exchange, and I think that's basically the right price. So I'm with Jerry Colomb.
Okay, Daryl, are we not giving enough respect to a horse like a Hoist in the All? We know what he can do at Aintree at this time of year.
Nah, I think the market's got this right. I think the market has got it right. Although I would concur with Dan and say that I think Corbett's Cross should, I was expecting more like 6 or 7s for him. He's been coming in for some support, but geez, you could have backed him at 15-8 to win that bloody National Hunt Chase, you know what I mean?
And you did. Well, you did. So.
Yeah, exactly. But like, now you're being asked to back him at 10-3 for this is a huge step up in grade for him. Like, you just go back and look at what was running in that race. This is a completely different test for him. Granted, the ground was suit. I think he's a very good horse.
It's because Corbett's Cross was so wow, like visually impressive. I know we can pick apart the form, but you know, when a horse puts in a performance like that, that has us all going wow in the moment, I think then they're always a bit
over bet next time.
The time was short. I mean, the time was absolutely atrocious. You know, a reflection of how slowly they went. Time form, times figure was 97. Like,
that's... Yeah, and he was able to do things at all his own pace as well. There was no pressure put in. And you look at the way that a race like this is going to be run, he's going to be asked to do things a lot quicker, a lot sharper. And that can be the differences between the novices and the open company. And I am with Jerry Colomb. I thought he was slightly unlucky in the Gold Cup, to be honest, between the third last and the second last. He was just hemmed in. There was a long presse in front of him, a loose horse just in front of him, and Galloping Deschamps was just on his outside. And Jack tried to pull him out slightly, and Paul Tannen was very clever, just sort of turned the head of Galloping Deschamps into him, kept him in for a little bit. I didn't think he got enough time to be wound up. I don't think he would have been beaten the winner, but I think he was better than the bear result there, despite the fact that he'd been beaten 3 lengths. This is his bread and butter, flat track. Ground would be absolutely spot on for him. If he can bounce out of that, I think he'll take a good bit of beating. I do respect Shishkin because I think Shishkin, on the balance of Jerry Colomb's profile, I don't think he's done anything that Shishkin wouldn't been able to do. So I do think they should be closer to the market. I've got a feeling, though, that Jerry Colomb, you're going to get 7-4, close to that on the day, I think. And at that sort of price, 7-4, predicting he'll be around 7-4, when he eases out, he would be the one that I'd be with.
On an related point, if Jerry comes out and pisses up and kicks Shishkin out of the way and Corbett's Cross out of the way, do you think it'll happen to Corrat Rambler's price in the National?
Nothing,
not at all.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Just one thing to final off there. If you're backing Brave Man's going with first time cheapies is Nichols has got a really, really good record using that headgear for the first time. He's 21 from 74 in recent years, which is better than his usual strike rate, which is what you want when you're looking at the headgear stats.
I thought that was a bit strange because I don't think he's ever really shown signs that he needs cheapies.
Yeah, need lighting up.
I think he's quite genuine as it is, but
I think you might need first time oxygen mask under these conditions after the
that's
just very brief. That's one of the reasons why Corbett's cross is shortening in the market, is because it'll be a real test of stamina, and obviously he's got the form over further.
Okay, let's roll on. We will move on to the entry hurdle, guys. I will start with UTC here. Obviously, 2.5 miles, and we've got two horses up at the top of the market. Both of them missed Cheltenham. And both of them, I think, are now going to, we're going to see them at the right trip. Bob Ollinger, 5-4, has always been saved for this. And he's had a real revival this season. I mean, fair cop to the team behind him. Impero Pass is 2-1, next best. Chased Home Statement over a trip, which I think will prove to be too short for him. Langadang at 8-1 out of Handicap Company, but the focus at the top of the market, TC. I love this. Who's going to win it? I hope Bob Ollinger, but I think I wouldn't bet him at this price, but I hope Bob Ollinger.
Yeah, well, I don't back or tip at these kind of prices, and I could happily let him go unbacked. But I do think Bob Ollinger is going to win this. I think he's 11-8 on the exchange at the moment. Again, I wouldn't lay him at 11-8. So I would have to make him a bet there. I'd happily take on Impero Passe on, although they're going to ride him differently when he resented going from the front last time. Like, as you said, he's done brilliantly. Well, this horse looked cooked, you know, not so long ago, didn't he? He looked like his best days were behind him, but he was massively impressive in that Cheltenham race. It was only a 4-1 race, but he's worked out really well, hasn't it?
One that I just can't get out of my head. You know, when you see something that's so visually impressive, that's the race from him.
Yeah, I think it was James Rowan on the second just couldn't believe how easily Bob Ollinger just breezed past him. And obviously there was no disgrace to that second to State Man last time. I think Bob Ollinger is, I wouldn't lay him at 11-8, so ergo, yeah, I wouldn't put anybody off backing me at that kind of price on the exchange.
In agreement, Daryl, Bob Ollinger?
Yeah, I think he'd take a world of beating in this. I think his price is very fair, to be honest with you. He did finish 5 lengths ahead of Impero Pass last time at the DRF. So they've got a very similar sort of profiles, I think. They both were impressive winners of the Ballymore. Bob Ollinger obviously went on a bit of a lull after that. It looks like Impero Pass hasn't really been the same horse since then. Stepping up and trip can only help him. But this track, this layout, 3 hurdles in the home straight, is just going to allow Bob to come there, sit in there, pop away and just quicken away. This is his ideal setup for me, I think. He's a horse that likes to travel into a race and he can quicken away. And Bob Ollinger for me.
With his head nice and high in the air, just looking at the stars, having a lovely
time. Keep the mud splatter out of his face.
It's a no from me, thank you, but he'll win anyway, won't he, Dan?
Oh, probably, yeah. I just find this so hard. I mean, just tapping back into that 2001 renewal, the last time Time Farm called it heavy. This race was 36 seconds slower than it had been when we called it soft about 4 years ago. In 2018, last time Time Farm called it soft. I mean, that's my one negative, whether with his high head carriage and potential wind issues that might be a reflection of, whether in an absolute war he's going to thrive if it comes down to a battle. But what gets him into a battle, you've got stamina concerns and probably well-being concerns with Impero Pass. I thought the move to make the running with him was bonkers, really. It backfired. I mean, he was only 3 lengths behind State Man, and suddenly they decided that we have to ride him completely differently to normal to make up the gap.
But it was as if they knew it was going to backfire before the tape even went up.
Yeah, there was some negativity, yeah. Nemean Lion's really proven a testing ground. The one I'm thinking might outrun his price, and if all eight stand the ground, I do think the upstart handicap of Langadam might be the one, just because he's so proven under conditions. He's got a good entry record too. He'll play his hand late, won't be involved in any early skirmishing for the lead. Frankly, it's going to be a war, Vanessa, and you could get a completely bonkers one. But Langadan, win and place, assuming 8 run, back him each way.
Just with Bob Ollinger in the ground, I mean, he's 5 from 6 when heavies appeared in the going description, and the one defeat was a length defeat by Fernie Hollow in the maiden hurdle earlier on in his career. So I wouldn't have any concerns about the ground. You mentioned Namir Lyon there. He's the one that interests me without the favourite.
Yeah, for me, TT, it's not even ground. It's just whether the ground at this trip with a really long punishing home straight, you know, just taxes him a bit. That's all I'm thinking.
I just think she'll sit there, though. She'll sit there and keep him completely covered up until the final hurdle. Mm. I think that's how he needs to be ridden.
And yeah, that's something to note. The running there this year has been really long, hasn't it? You've been sort of a furlong or so
just
running.
Over a furlong, yeah.
Yeah. Be fun, okay, fun watch this one, Vanessa.
A fun watch. It's a race I'm really, genuinely, really looking forward to. Very much so. Let's move on to the Fox Hunters, guys. The 405, 2.5 miles, obviously over the Grand National fences. It's on the line, is back to go one place better than he did in the Cheltenham Fox Hunters. But of course, he fell in this race last year. That was at Beaches. He's 7-2 top of the market. Animix next best at 4-1. Spyglass Hill in there at 5-1. Time Leader, 5-1. Look, TC, not a man who bets within any way his heart, but everyone looks for a fairy tale in this sort of race, but actually we want the winner. So what wins the Fox Hunters?
I don't know, but I do know Schwarzenegger are playing four places, and nice. Basically, like I say, I don't really follow this, so it would be a bit disingenuous to me to say. So I had a look. Betting.betfair colleague Reese Williams has put up three anti-post. Two of those are running, Time Leader and Benny's King. He's got good price about them. Another untraced expert, Darren Pierce, agrees with Time Leader. He's also put up Spyglass here and Gabiro. And some interesting stats, if you want, about, I was going through the trainer form stats and found out that David Kemp, the trainer of Rebel Dawn Rising, is 6 from 15 in points this season. And Hannah Roach, trainer of Time Leader, is 3 from 7 in Hunter Chases. And of the other four, only one has finished out the first three. So I've just nicked some information from East, North, South and West, and there they are.
I like it. Just steal everybody else's work and then give them a name check. Happy days.
Yeah.
It's good work as well, because those people that he's listed there, they follow this scene with a fine tooth comb. Yeah. So
we flagged up Darren last time and Reese Williams, like the Betfair columnist. They both put up scene nominee, the winner at 16s. They know their stuff.
I like to see how many made-up point-to-point course names I can get in without people spotting it.
Nice, that's a fun game. I hope you don't do this podcast.
You know, it's a little known fact. I used to be the point-to-point correspondent for The Independent when I was 20 and 21.
What?
And I used to go around the likes of Tweezledown, Charing Cross and all sorts.
The station in London.
That does surprise me, TC. That does surprise me.
Charing Cross, you mean you were in the train station in London?
Okay. I'm going to get told off here. Dan, what do you follow this scene, this Fox?
I do when I'm on track and there's a hunter chase to prep for, of course. Tony mentioned the two names that I like. I mostly like Benny's King. I mean, I think Time Leader could just be a bit vulnerable to a stronger finisher. He's a really strong travelling horse. He comes into it on the back of a really sound run, didn't he? He was in front for most of the latter stages at Cheltenham. And you go back to last year, yes, he was 80-1, whereas It's on the Line was 8-1, but he finished fifth, whereas It's on the Line fell. And I think that's a doubt with the favourite, just his jumping. He was going left, he was a bit sluggish. He's a very strong stayer and he'll keep galloping without question, but will he be a bit too wayward to still be involved late on? The case with Benny's King is fairly obvious, I think. I think he's got a really strong chance. He ran in the race last year, was second, ran an absolute stormer. He's won eight times in his career. Six of those have been on soft and heavy ground. He bounced back to much better form when reveling in the mud at Leicester to win by a long old way. And you go back to some of his other form in the mud, like, it's not that long ago. I know he's nearly old enough to smoke now, but he was second to Dasher Drasher, giving Dasher Drasher £2 on heavy ground at Ascot in a handicap not many moons ago. So he's an absolute mudlark. The lad who rode him at Leicester's back on again, 8-1 for a horse who's going to get the right sort of ride up with the pace, out of trouble, out of the carnage, on ground that very much suits him. I'd have had him closer to the market leaders without a doubt.
Okay, interesting. Okay. Daryl, let's move on to the Red Rum Handicap Chase over the 2 miles. Always fiercely competitive, this. And we've got a rematch up at the top of the market. Unexpected Party at 9-2 off the back of his win at Cheltenham in the Grand Annual. He's up £8 for that victory. And Parth Doro was back in third that day for the Gavin Cromwell Yard and reopposes again 11-2, second best in the market, and is only up two for that good run behind Unexpected Party. You've then got Senoir in there at 13-2, and the winner of this race last year, wasn't it? Dancing on My Own at 7-1. Heltenham as well, he's been in red hot form. Hom Pub League at 9-1. This is red hot. So come on, you can have a couple of throws.
No, it's
here.
A red rum. Red rum. It is not
the red rum. Sorry, it's the red rum. It's red hot. Nicely done, Dan. Go on, Daryl. You can take it away here.
Yeah, I can't. I only want to have one dart in here, and it's with Sam Ra. And obviously, I was with him at Cheltenham last time, and I thought he was given a bit of a poor ride, really, by Mark Walsh. Not typical of Mark Walsh, but I thought he was given a poor ride. He tried to duck towards the inside, got short of room, switched out. He made up plenty of ground from off the pace. I actually don't think that course, the old course, suits his style of running. I think a Grand Annual, you tend to want to be up with a pace. I think he had to come from too far back. But Aintree, it's got a massive long home straight and it will give him plenty of time to get going. He was brilliant here last year behind Banbridge in the graded race over 2.5 miles. Back in a handicap, over 2 miles today. He won't mind the mud. 150, he's been dropped £2 for that. 150 is fine for him. He has got a good record in handicaps. If you really look at his handicap record, he's only been in a handful. He's got a decent record. I didn't think there was too many horses in here that were ahead of the handicap. I actually thought this was a fairly weak race, to be honest. Very much respect Unexpected Party. I just think a lot of these horses have done their winning already this season, and I just think class could prevail in this particular contest. I respect Unexpected Party, but I'm hoping that the layout of this track will suit Sam Ra much better than Cheltenham did. And he's definitely been primed for a handicap this season. So I think he's got more to come.
Okay. Sam Ra, a confident nod then. A confident selection, sorry.
Four places, I should have said. Each way, winning place.
Yes. Oh, okay. Each way with the extra places. Like it. Thanks, Daryl. Yeah, four places in there. Should have flagged that up. Dan, over to you, please, for the Red Rum.
Yeah, well, he's the class horse, isn't he? My concerns are his trademark tactics in this race, because I think for the each way part, it's tempting. So I think he'll definitely pick up pieces. It's just my concern is down the years, this has just been a sort of a prominent race's benefit. Like five of the last eight renewals, something's either made all or been in the first two throughout. You know, just the pace holds it really well. Fences come up thick and fast in the back straight. It can place pressure on the jumping of horses that are in and around others, and it can get a bit crowded. That's what Dancing on My Own did when he basically dominated from a good way out last year after sitting handy, but he's much higher in the weights this time around. I was with Daryl's other, I thought, other shout. I think Unexpected Party's really solid now. I think I just misread him. I mean, he ran in the Time Farm race at on trials day, and I just had it made, oh, he's just become a bit disappointing, this horse. He's nine now, but I guess it was just part of a plan. They got him down the weights. He freshened him back up, dropped him to the right trip, and he was given a ride.
That's good. That plan, surely not.
Well, he definitely got that horse back on song for the big day, and he got a ride that had real belief in him. If he gets the same sort of ride, I think it's really hard to see a handful beating him. The one I thought was overpriced of the others, Vanessa, was Irish Blaze. Done really well since joining Kian Collins. He was with Gordon Elliott. He's sort of like a late blooming novice. Looks like he's been saved for this and missed Cheltenham on purpose. Loads of heavy ground form. The defeat of Captain's Nephew two starts back reads well. That horse has come out and finished a clear second in a handicap since, as has the fourth from that day. And he's just going to get the right sort of ride under optimal conditions. He's 16s under a trainer that, you know, we've seen him more than once come over and create a big impression in Britain this season, Kian Collins, with the likes of Effanock, Fizz and horses like that. So they're my two against the field.
Okay. Atis, who would you like to throw into the mix? Are you getting involved with the extra place or have you got a win only?
I haven't decided how I'm going to play it yet, but it'll definitely be Senoir. I think he's the standout in here. The market's already been nibbling at him already today. The eights has gone in all but one place. Sportsbook's opened 15-2, has gone into 13-2. I'd probably I probably, if I remember, McCollum goes up tomorrow, I'll still be probably tipping him at fives, I would have thought, because, yeah, I think he's got a lot going for him. For a lot of the reasons Daryl said, obviously he's been dicking around in graded company before they pulled the trigger last time. And obviously they missed the target, but I suspect if he hadn't made a really, really bad mistake four out, he would have gone very close to winning there. He had to make up ground again, came back on the bridle, ducked inside, going around the final bend. That didn't work out, had to switch. Was beaten when he made a mistake at the last, but that was, again, that was another momentum stopper. So I think you throw it all into the mix, down 2 pounds. I suspect, you know, he's going to have a... He's obviously, you know, he was a grade one winner in Boxing Day 2022. So it wasn't that long ago. He's back to 150. I suspect he want better ground, but he did finish just beating in a photo in a Morgiana on heavy ground. So hopefully that won't be a problem. I just thought he stood out to me in this. Didn't really fancy anything else. They're 6-4 goers, so should be able to creep into the race. Yeah, Samroar for me. I'd be a backer at probably fives and bigger.
Brilliant. Okay. Any other business then? That is the ITV races covered, but we have missed a grade two bumper for the mares at the end of the card. And of course, the first race of the Thursday is the Manifesto Novices Chase, 2 miles, 4 furlongs, grade dawning rematch with Ginny's Destiny. Really looking forward to that as well. So TC, do you have any other business, any other tips you'd like to put up at this stage, either in the bumper or that chase to kick things off, please?
Just very quickly, yeah, I'll be looking to go get with Blow Your Wad without Ginny's Destiny, without Grey Dawning. Grey Dawning's been trimmed into 10 to 11 today. I'll probably be with Ginny's Destiny at the prices over that one, but I think obviously Grey Dawning is the right fab and the right strong fab. I thought Blow Your Wad didn't really handle Cheltenham, but either side of that one, a Kempton handicap in a really good time, and I thought he was by far the best horse in the race, by more than a winning distance when beating Tamura's in first time cheap pieces at the same track last time. Bit worried about the ground, but he's around about fives without the favourite. I thought Blow Your Wad is interesting. And obviously he's the only one out of the five that didn't go to Cheltenham. So that would be a plus. And in the bumper, not my kind of bag, but your best friend, Sir Mark Prescott, puts first time cheap pieces on Solid Silver, who's got some solid form in her three starts to date. Place form in the last two starts, puts cheap pieces on, and when Prescott puts cheap pieces on the flat, he's 24 from 112 since 2016, and that horse is 33s in a few places, and I think Solid Silver with that headgear on is overpriced with that in mind.
Oh, lovely little find there in the lucky last. Thank you for that, TC. What about you, Dan Barber? Any other business in either of the races?
Yeah, you know, lengthy in the odds of Grey Dawning in the first. I think under these conditions, he's just... I mean, Ginny's Destiny, I think, probably wants less testing ground, bearing in mind how he wilted at Warwick last season on very bad ground over hurdles. He's going to do the same role, trying to run the finish out of Grey Dawning. I just think on really bad ground, Grey Dawning's dominance will shine through even more, bearing in mind what he did at Warwick in the mud, in the race set up by Apple Away et al. So I think Grey Dawning, I mean, I just don't think it's Ilete Tomps will cope with the examination. I don't think his jumping will be good enough, and he might not have the stamina either to cope with a horse like Grey Dawning. I can just sort of see taking over three out and just absolutely pouring it on as others are wilting. My Gold Cup winner of next year, that is, of course, Grey Dawning.
Really? God, people's confidence about him, I do not share it, but that's the great game that we're in. Isn't that right?
Before we wrap up, I would say keep an eye out for non-runners, because I think the ground is going to be at its worst on Thursday morning. And yeah, I can see the likes of Dancing On My Own coming out and quite a few others when the realisation sets in just how deep it is.
Okay. Daryl, last word to you in terms of those two races and anything you'd like to throw into the mix.
I'd entirely agree with Dan about Grey Dawning, lengthening your odds market. I think he's got a fantastic chance. He'll relish the ground, obviously. The Betfair Chase winner of next season and the bumper. I've thought Mongibello for the Crawfords, JJ Slevenon was very interesting. The form was very good from the run at Down Royal, penultimate start. The second chase down Romeo Coolio previously, who finished second in the champion bumper. The third had been second to Firefox before that as well in a bumper. And the fifth finished three lengths behind Down Memory Lane and ahead of 130 rated mare Brucio. Got to forgive the run at Leopardstown last time in a grade two. I'm not sure what happened there. But an RPR of 120 for the bumper run at Down Royal looks very, very interesting in this race. Monk Ibello, about 12-1. I'd keep an eye on that one. We'll relish the ground as well.
Breaking news, Mark Walsh is going to ride Limerick Lace in the Grand National.
Oh, breaking news indeed. Well, there's all sorts of interesting jockey angles because Danny Mullins is off at Ilete Toms. Having forged a nice relationship. JJ's off Nürburgring. I mean, it's all...
Oh, wait, yeah, I thought I've missed that then.
He's because of the double brown factor, he's probably on Interlotto, isn't he?
Nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice, yeah. Very true. Right, in that, I think we need to wrap up. So, Dan, I will start with you on that, please.
Can you start with somebody else? Sorry.
Yeah, of course. TC.
You could probably guess mine. Saint-Noir in the Red Rum.
Nice. Confident selection. Love it. Daryl, you're
now. It was going to be Saint-Noir because I need the BSP points if he wins. But look, I'll go Sergino because Tony's gone Saint-Noir. Sergino.
Yeah, okay. You're allowed to share naps. I don't think that's against the rules, but that's fine. Dan, have you had enough thinking time? It's not like this question wasn't coming your way.
Yeah, it's like when you're asked for a highlight on the card on the telly and you forget a single horse that exists, let alone that ran on the race. Hello. Oh, sod it. Yeah. I'll go outside my comfort zone. You've got to push yourselves, haven't you? Benny's King in the Fox Hunters.
Oh, lovely. Wasn't expecting that. Okay.
Nice progressive youngster there.
Brilliant. Well, look, guys, thank you very much, you three on here. Listeners and viewers, thank you as always. Don't forget all the extra place races and the offers. Completely free bet on horse racing multiples on Thursday and Friday of the Aintree Grand National Festival. But do read the T's and C's, opt in and do it responsibly and use those safer gambling tools. I know I say it every show, but I just don't know why you're not all using them because they're very easy to find and there's something for everyone to get stuck into those safer gambling tools, especially for meetings like this. We'll be bringing you the daily shows. So obviously we'll be recording tomorrow for Friday and then the big one as well for the Grand National. But for now, good luck on the first day of the Grand National. That was Racing Any Better.